Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue in beautiful downtown Milwaukee. It's time for The Upswing on WTMJ, showcasing businesses, entrepreneurs, and community leaders throughout the great state of Wisconsin. Here's your host, Jeff Sherman.
Because I'm going to make this place yours.
Good morning, Wisconsin. Good morning, Milwaukee. Happy Friday, indeed. Bringing together today on the show two of Milwaukee's finest, two just wonderful people, Beth Ridley, Greg Marshall, for a fun, spirited show around work, life, and marketing. Greg has led hundreds of organizations nationwide through brand messaging and alignment as chief storyteller at CI Design. Beth is president and CEO of Ridley Consulting Group, a corporate and inclusion culture expert, just putting together the show over the last several days. You know, we're going to talk about kind of what we stand for, what we promise to do, how we treat others, how we package, promote, and position and protect our work, our companies, our communities, and our personal lives. Not easy work at all. Never easy answers. But easier when you talk to good, smart people like Beth and Greg. So first up, I wanted to find a way to kind of allow the upswing to talk about what Milwaukee Public Schools is going through right now and then really position it to kind of two culture and storytelling and branding experts. MPS marketing plan. Obviously, when you go through crises, as the district kind of is right now, you know, leadership change, funding crises, you kind of got to get to the heart of what it's all about. And that's the kids, and that's education, and that's moving the community forward. But when you're in times like this, those big elephants in the room, they get a little bigger, right? And they get a little stronger, and they get a little louder, and you're getting statements from every organization in town. You're getting more parental concerns. So marketing sometimes is called to the rescue, at least I like to think so. And let's say, Greg Marshall, MPS becomes a client of your organization. What do you do as those first steps to kind of get them through what they're going through right now?
Yeah, it's a massive question.
That's a big question.
I'm glad you're asking me.
Yeah, it's you think about marketing is really creating an audience so that you can scale an invitation, and you study the audience and you understand where are they at in their journey, in their hero's journey, so to speak, and how can we be the guide that comes alongside of them at these critical moments to help them succeed. And marketing is scaling the invitation to have that relationship. We want to be in your life. And when you look at MPS or a lot of institutions right now, there's so little trust in institutions in general that thinking a campaign is going to move the needle in a significant way is it's not realistic. And so from a client standpoint, I would probably recommend bringing up the word brand again, but not from just a logo standpoint or recognize our name or whatever, but more so get to the heart of, is the leadership really aligned on what we're promising? And can we be really honest about where we're delivering on that promise and where we're not? And once we can see what that promise is, we're aligned on it, and we begin to celebrate where it's happening and be honest about where it's not, now we have something to talk about. And if we're honest about where it's not aligning, where it's not going well, and we humble ourselves and invite other people to help, invite outsiders, admit that we're not getting it right, now we can start like building an actual brand that enables us to build a campaign that's rooted in the reality of where we're at, where we want to go, where we know we can be with the help of the community around us.
Yeah.
So that's like, I think the ultimate work is built becoming the story as opposed to trying to figure out how to say it in a way that makes people want to come.
Yeah. And it's important to remember that MPS is entering the second year of a strategic plan, and the district is constantly embarking on new surveys, series of meetings, and gathering feedback as they go on. And you look at the website, the strategic plan dashboard, it's about student achievement. It's about graduation and post-secondary preparedness. It's about staff and professional learning. It's about staff and morale. It's about right-sizing the district and about right-sizing the facilities and upgrades. All really big challenges that are ahead. But when we come back from the break, I want to dive a little deeper into the culture and the leadership component with Beth Ridley, Greg Marshall. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Beth Ridley, Greg Marshall join us today. A lively conversation around marketing, life, work, and much more. Mayor Cavalier Johnson has a 10:30 news conference to discuss next steps with local school challenges in Milwaukee, but I'm sure we'll showcase opportunities moving forward as well. So, Beth Ridley, as you look at the MPS situation through, you know, through a parental lens and through your corporate culture lens, What are some of your kind of your workplace feedback type suggestions? Because there's a lot happening, especially when a leader steps down. How do you kind of best replace messaging without he or she at the helm?
Yeah, I mean, so a lot of it also depends on what has the culture been, and those people on the inside, i.e. teachers and principals, can they also help to translate a positive message to the community, to the parents? And so they should have been brought along all along. And so no company, no school should be just left up to any one leader. Leadership and leadership skills, whether you are a formal leader, the head of the person at the top, or you're a leader in the classroom as a student, I mean, as a teacher, that really should have been ingrained all along. And when I looked at the strategic plan, a lot of really good things are in the strategic plan. I'm not going to fault them for that. I saw a lot of good professional development for teachers, make them better teachers. The thing that was glaringly absent for me was there was no leadership development. So I don't think that's ever been sort of a part of the ethos of the school system. Are we developing people who can lead in the classroom, lead as principals for the whole school? So if the person at the top leaves, there's not like an absence.
Right.
And then also the teachers feel good about being there and they can help spread the word through the great marketing advice that Greg gave. There are also those internal people that are ambassadors into the community.
Yeah, because there are still are many wonderful, good, smart people across the district, many of them principals and leaders within the individual schools that have to be empowered to be key ambassadors to provide the message, not only to their students, but the community. And again, there has to be a playbook around that, and it's there. But, you know, now it's time for some reinvention, hopefully, without a doubt. So let's talk about workplace feedback. And I think it can kind of go into the topic we were just discussing. But you look at kind of generational expectations around workplace norms. They differ pretty widely. So we may have to adjust how we provide constructive criticism in the workplace today. You got four generations in the workplace now. You got the Gen Zs, you got the millennials, you got Gen X, you got the boomers. And communication and behavioral norms are a little different for each one of us. What are your tips, Beth, for giving and receiving critical feedback in the workplace?
So I know a lot of my clients complain about Gen Z. They find them demanding and annoying. And I've got three Gen Zers at home, and I will concur.
Okay,
they are
all right,
actually all right. Very annoying. However, with
come
that,
on, Mom.
But I will say that I think they're bringing a new sensibility into the workplace that actually benefits everybody. So not to stereotype all Gen Zs, but they really like feedback, a lot of feedback, very often. They want positive feedback, as well as they're very open to critical feedback, as long as that's not the only thing they get. And they like transparency. So I think my generation, Gen X, you know, we've just thought of feedback at my year-end review. Everything stores up until then, and then it's like a shocker and a surprise. It might be too much to do anything about it. But I think Gen Z, they want feedback along the way. They also want encouragement along the way. They want guidance along the way and full transparency, why they're getting this feedback, how it's going to help them. I actually think that's a good thing. And I think most people can benefit from that. So I think they're bringing in with a new sensibility, some new best practices that I think will get ingrained in the culture for the better.
So it's more of an ongoing, more transparent process than just a, hey, here's one meeting. We're going to dump it all on you.
Yeah.
And is that what you're seeing, Greg, with your clients from a marketing lens?
Yeah. And even with our team, I feel like there's definitely an ache for honest conversation. And it's refreshing when you open up the topic with a group of people and say, hey, we're going to bring challenge to each other. A good culture brings high challenge and high support. And we're not going to just support each other because then it's like we're coddling one another. But we're going to bring challenge. And when you talk about it and you practice it and you model it, I think people feel really appreciative of it, though some people are very wounded and you get beat up in a different environment and you come in and somebody's criticizing you and it can flip into this self-preservation mode that can cause a lot of damage. But my read on it is people ache for honesty that's partnered with, I can tell this person is for me. And I think I'm enjoying that dynamic right now. I don't feel like there's a big resistance to it. I feel like there's just an ache to do more of it.
Yeah. Well, and when you lead with the honesty and kindness, when you get to crisis situations, wherever your organization is, it helps make those crises a little bit more smooth.
I want to add honesty and authenticity. That's the other thing that the younger generation and when you have an authentic relationship with someone, they see you as a full person, not just as an employee. It makes that critical feedback easier to swallow because it feels like it's coming from a good place.
Yeah, 100%. I have a teammate who said something to me in a message that felt really passive aggressive, and I just called them up. And I was like, hey, what you wrote felt passive aggressive, and I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt, but what was that about? And this person was like, oh, yeah, it was totally passive aggressive. And I was like, well, okay, let's talk about that because that's hurtful. And the person was like, well, I do that because I don't want to hurt you. And I'm like, okay. And so we just had this really honest conversation. I was like, if you are mad at me, just call and tell me. I would much rather that than you be. And the point of that is like, it was an awesome conversation.
Right.
And it's just people are open to it as long as, like you said, we're going to come authentic. You know that I'm for you. When I bring challenge, I like to say like, hey, I got your back. I'm just letting you know this is how that came across. And it's hard, you know. But yeah, I think people are way better at taking it than we think. But that said, I've heard a college professor refer to like if they criticize a student's work, the student just crumbles. Mm-hmm. And so there is this like other dynamic of like, you know, what's going on with our inability to actually hear hard things, right, too. So I don't really know how to speak.
There's some generational challenges there, but there's also some technology challenges as well. So when we come back from the break, I want to talk about voice notes. Greg just said, so I just called him up. Well, sometimes you just call.
Yeah, who's answering that call?
Nobody's answering the phones anymore. And the CEO of Zoom has some interesting thoughts as well. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Welcome back to The Upswing. Fortune 100 corporate executive turned entrepreneur Beth Ridley, storyteller extraordinaire Greg Marshall join us today. Communication at work. You go to WTMJ.com. In the upper left side, you click watch live or listen live, wherever you are. If you're watching live, we've probably all seen something like this throughout the workplace. People just kind of walking through the office with their hand. The phone is usually horizontal like this when they're doing voice notes because they're replying to messages, replying to email through voice notes. And fans of voice notes say they make us communicate better. They're kind of often with their loved ones and their family. They're like, all right, voice notes are it. That's how we're going to go. But they're coming into the workplace more and more so now. But some are getting burned out on the whole voice note thing. Do you two use voice notes day to day in your work life, Greg?
Never.
Never.
I personally do not. My husband does constantly.
Okay. And how does it make you feel? Like when you receive a voice, you don't have to talk about, you know, specifically your husband, but if you get a voice note compared to a text message, is there a difference in how you receive that message?
I haven't necessarily noticed it. I think it's kind of weird because he walks around and he'll do a sentence and they're like, period. And then another, you know what I mean? It's like, right, what are you doing? So I haven't necessarily noticed that they look different to me. It's just not how I communicate. And I feel like it would be too much stream of conscious thinking, doing a voice and sending it, as opposed to if I have to sit and type something, I'm at least editing in my mind before I type the words.
But are you talking about a voice message that's an audio recording of their voice or the dictation of the text?
An audio recording of their voice in response to either an email or a text message.
Yeah, I feel like it's a kind of paradoxical because it feels more intimate, like the person really wants to connect with me.
Yeah.
But it's a little burdensome because I got to wait for them to say what they're saying, which takes longer than if I were just to read the message.
Yeah.
And I've had a client who asked if we could communicate, I think it was through Telegram, through voice notes.
Okay.
And it very quickly died because I had such a hard time. Like, it was just so much more efficient for me to type out a quick thing than to try to explain it. It took longer. And so we eventually went back to just emailing and calling each other.
Yeah.
But yeah, I haven't hooked on to it yet.
Okay. So from the 414 talk and text line, the WTMJ talk and text line, by the way, is 855-616-1620. From the 414, these phones are a big part of the problem. All problems in society today. Nothing like direct communication. Funny how we didn't have half of these problems in the workplace and everywhere else. Pre-cell phone, text, emails, era, etc. Communication needs to get better and be more in person all the time. So pretty good insight there coming through on the WTMJ talk and text line. Some struggle, I think, to read or to view the messages in the first place because you got the small smartphone screen and it's coming through. So people just don't know how to use it. But for the most part, I mean, I find there's a convenience to it that makes it, all right, I use it to bring my thoughts through in my own notes, and then I cut and paste and use it in my email or text. I don't send a whole lot of voice messages myself, but I use them for myself to remind myself of things to do.
You know what I like about all this? The optionality, the flexibility.
Yeah.
I mean, and I think that's just sort of where we're moving. Even like, you know, our coffee at Starbucks, you can get it so customized and tailored just for you. I think that's sort of the mentality that's filtering into everything, how we communicate. I've got a bazillion options based on how I feel, based on my preference, based on the time of day, based on what I'm doing. So I sort of like all the options.
Yeah, I dig that too. I guess when I said never, that wasn't quite true. I do use them when I want to say something really sarcastic to my wife, for example, and I don't want the tone to be missed out on a text.
Okay.
So I feel like it is true. Like, you kind of have a sense of whether it be an emoji or a text with words, if the text or email has no capital letters, right, you know, or if it's a voice, then you kind of just intuitively learn what enables you to get your idea across with the people you're sending it to.
All right. We'll get your thoughts on phone calls at work when we come back from the break. Welcome back to the Friday Upswing Show, work, life, marketing, branding, and more with Greg Marshall and Beth Ridley. Let's talk about LinkedIn. Been in the news a lot lately, kind of on all of our minds and day-to-day workflow, I know. But a recent move from LinkedIn to promote and integrate daily games into its networking platform has raised some eyebrows. And probably not a whole lot different than the New York Times buying Wordle, right? You want to get engagement. You want to get people to come back to the platform on a regular basis. But is it counterproductive for a business platform like LinkedIn that its mission, and I quote, is to connect the world's professionals to make them more productive and successful? If I have three games on the side of my LinkedIn screen when I'm going to connect and promote and position, is that a good move for the company?
Yeah, I think it's kind of short-sighted. I think because the goal is pretty clearly, and maybe I'm wrong, but the goal is to, like you said, create engagement, make people more addicted, another reason to come back. But as soon as you create a surface reason to come back that's sort of addictive, you also give the first reason they're going to stop using it because they're going to realize, like, I'm using this game too much. I'm not productive anymore. So it could create a spike in engagement. We can celebrate that. But eventually people are going to – it's going to be a reason to not use it anymore because I'm so distracted by these games. I mean, that might be an overstatement, but that was my first thought when I see it.
Yeah. And I've seen them on the side of my profile, but I haven't clicked on any of them, and nor do I intend to do it. But at the same time, I see, hey, you need a reason for people to use the platform on a regular basis, but I think that reason already exists. And the thing I like about LinkedIn, it doesn't give me all these other reasons, and it helps me be more productive because I'm connecting and contributing content based upon what I do in my day-to-day work life.
Yeah, that's what I felt when you said that. I immediately got tired. I'm like more multitasking. I just got exhausted by the thought of, like, I'm on that LinkedIn. That's already exhausting enough, scrolling and then trying to keep up. And now I got Wordle. And even if I don't play it, now it's there. You know what I mean? That's like too much clutter in my mind. That was my first thought.
So what is your process, Beth, for accepting and reaching out for connections via the LinkedIn platform.
I think it's great for that. Yeah. I mean, it's a great way to continue a conversation if you meet someone in person. I was just at a conference, immediately connected on LinkedIn, and now we're scheduling time to like meet in person and keep that relationship going. I think for the work I do, my clients are CEOs, heads of HR, heads of L&D. I can target them specifically, and we can have really deep, meaningful conversations on LinkedIn. So I think it's a great way to kind of just expand your message worldwide as a solopreneur that I didn't have that opportunity, you know, before LinkedIn.
Do you always provide a personal note when you reach out with connections, or you just press connect and hope that they accept?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
It sort of depends on who the leader is, or what your connection is. It's kind of like a numbers game too. So the more people who I would like to do business with, sometimes it's just connect, 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 because I feel like for every 10 connections, one person will turn into like a, like an actual conversation. So sometimes it's just a numbers game based on title and company, connect, connect. But oftentimes it's those meaningful conversations that you can start to build that relationship virtually, when it just would never happen in person because we're not in the same room, or it takes too much time.
Greg, how do you advise clients to create content on LinkedIn? A lot of CEOs can be nervous to go there, knowing that even with the best teams, like the day-to-day or the week-to-week content grind is real, and you got to position in a way that is authentic, but yet germane to what you do each and every day, and have industry leadership and thought leadership.
Yeah, it really depends on the goals of a company, and you know, creating a strategy of like who we're trying to reach, what do we want them to do. But I don't know. I feel like, I didn't understand LinkedIn until, I started hanging out with a guy named Wayne Breitbarth, who's a local author about LinkedIn, and he's a coach on LinkedIn, and showed me like the, how to use it in a way that really is a relationship building tool that can lead to leads. And so with the company, it's not just creating content, but it's using it as a tool and looking at all the different ways that it can connect you to people, to the right people. And that could be ads, that could be gated content, you know, or it could be the organic content. But creating a calendar, being intentional about it, being authentic, back to that word again, it's all important, but not seeing it just as another social media thing, but it's actually can help you build actual relationships with real people.
And it is actual work. We'll come back from the break. I want to get a few more tips from both of you on LinkedIn. And we'll talk about being more positive at work. And then I do want to get to the fact that people just aren't answering their phones at work. And what should we do about it? This is The Upswing. Beth Ridley and Greg Marshall join us today. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Upswing. Life, work, mainly online today with Greg Marshall, Beth Ridley. I'm Jeff Sherman. You're listening to WTMJ. So LinkedIn, Beth, you do a wonderful job, I think, positioning your expertise and yourself as a thought leader.
Thank you.
But I think, not from your lens, many CEOs are uncomfortable positioning themselves as, you know, celebrating the good, being champions of everything, like, hey, this isn't who I am, but I know I need to do it. How do you counsel your clients that are a little intrepid to post and be their true selves on LinkedIn?
I think just consistency of posting something, and whether that consistency is once a month, once a week, once a day. I was hugely uncomfortable posting on LinkedIn originally because you are sort of putting yourself out there in this cancel culture. Oh my God, what will people think? The one thing I like about LinkedIn, it is largely very positive and very professional. Right. You're sort of like bringing your work self onto the platform. Yeah. And so I think to overcome the discomfort and to be more authentic, just keep posting. And you'll eventually get your voice. And once you have your voice and your POV on things, it you feel a little bit more empowered to really state what you think, and people will give you that immediate feedback. So I think just consistency, consistency, till it feels more authentic and natural and you're not overthinking.
Do you calendar out your content? Like, so it's like, hey, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, these are my topics. This is, I'm going to take 3 hours and post.
I do both, especially if it's like a month, like May was Mental Health Awareness Month, huge for me. So I definitely knew there were things I wanted to talk about. But then I also leave space for just impromptu, like, oh, I was at this conference and it was awesome because I learned this, or what a great question somebody else asked. So I sprinkle in a little bit of like impromptu, or like, oh my God, I just had a breakthrough with a client and I want to share some of the things that we talked about because I'm inspired. So there's a little bit of like impromptu organic stuff as well.
Right. Yeah. I have a Google Doc where I just write possible posts that I want to maybe share. And then I just kind of intuit when I feel like actually sharing one. But the way that I frame it in my own head is with any social media, I just remind myself that it's a digital trail. And what I post, I think of it in terms of like someday my kids or my grandkids might look at this feed, and I want them to be able to get a sense of what I did, what I was proud of, and what I was about. So it's kind of like a bigger picture way of guiding myself in it. And I find that that does lead to people being interested, and people will say, and like Beth and I were just talking when we were off the air about, people will say like, I love your stuff on LinkedIn. And it's like, they've never liked it. They've never made a comment, but people are reading it and receiving it because I think they sense that it's coming from an authentic place of, I just want to share stuff that I'm proud about. And I don't have a huge agenda attached to it, but like you said, I want to be consistent about it, which I sometimes don't do, but
yeah. And ultimately you do want it to be, maybe it's not the right term, but you want it to be a business development tool, right? You want it ultimately to kind of come back. And if you put out in the world what you think is good, kind, thoughtful content, you want that to come back to you.
And that's the best business development because it's not salesy. I only want to work with people who know what I'm about and want to work with me. I'm not trying to work with everybody or sell to everybody. And the only way people will know that is if I'm authentic with my point of view and what I think about things and what I do. And then I'm hoping that those people where it resonates for them will then, you know,
Beth, what percentage of the people who read your posts do you think are your audience? Like, you're a leadership coach.
Yeah, I mean, maybe half, because then I got a lot of friends and family. Yeah. I've got, like, you know, yeah, it's just a lot of people who wouldn't necessarily be my clients, but I think they sort of are interested in me. So I would say it's probably half.
Yeah, I feel like for me it's probably like 20%. Like, I think it's pretty small, like, who's actually looking at it that would hire me to do a thing. But it kind of doesn't matter to me because, like, that is awesome to engage with that group. But it feels good to just be part of a community. And LinkedIn is a place where you can share that type of content that's actually thoughtful and professional, and people are expecting it and want to see it.
Very good. When we come back for the final segment, we'll talk about measuring happiness and positivity at work. Beth Ridley, Greg Marshall join us today on The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. Work-life integration today with Beth Ridley and Greg Marshall. The CEO of Zoom says that an AI clone will one day take your video calls, send your emails, and do nearly every part of your job that happens on the computer screen right here in front of us.
Yes, please.
All right, let's do it. What are your thoughts on AI-powered digital twins attending meetings for you, Beth Ridley?
I want to see it first, and I'm not 100% opposed to it. I've been using that AI like meeting summary thing, which is helpful.
Yeah, it takes notes for you. It's great.
I think it can make us more productive. I don't know. Let's see it. I'm not hearing anything that is causing me tremendous alarm. I think you're always going to need the person to do the sense making, but if it can make us smarter, communicate more effectively, get our ideas across more effectively, remember stuff that we don't remember, I'm sort of on board right now.
I mean, if we can use AI through Zoom to make us a better, more fine-tuned version of ourselves in a meeting, what's the downside to
Someone told me that with Zoom, or no, Teams, you can now put on lipstick, makeup, have your own hair, and so now that,
all right.
I am all
I that. Maybe could use some hair, at least, you know, take the shine off the top of my head. Greg, what are your thoughts on AI and Zoom?
I think if we were really going to have avatars that show up for us, we are not there. They're receiving information, summarizing that information, and giving it to us. I feel like it'll be exciting for 15 minutes, and then it'll be the death of all unnecessary meetings, because the same thing can be accomplished by just sending the information, because you're just reading information. So I feel like it'll be one of those things that's like a huge hype, and then we just learned that we didn't need that to be a meeting.
But maybe that is the death of meetings.
Yeah.
I don't go to the meetings, but the meetings can still happen.
Yeah, but it's like, even like, what's the point right. of a bunch of avatars getting together when a message could have just been sent?
Yeah, I mean, does it make you more productive because you can be, finally, I can be in two places at once.
Mm.
Yeah, but I know very well that it's very different reading a summary of a conversation versus being in the conversation. So, I don't know. I don't think there's a lot of up to it other than it's just like humans are like, ooh, look what I can do. I can make it so that we don't even have to be at the meeting, but it's an avatar. And it's like, okay, well, that, like I said, that'll be cool for a minute. And then we'll realize that that was a situation where there wasn't a meeting that was actually needed. And you're just, again, we're sending messages to each other. And eventually we're going to have to get a meeting together in real life because we have to ask questions based on the summary that was given us.
Are you seeing or hearing a reluctance to use AI platforms in the workplace? Like people are, employees are saying, I don't know, that seems like cheating.
I think a little bit of both, but interestingly enough, real life story, I was doing a workshop with a client and the CEO was on, and the individual who had packaged the workshop and was, you know, doing the introduction, he said to her, when you wrote the description for this workshop, did you use AI? And she goes, yes, I did. And he goes, oh, that's awesome. I want more employees to do that. Because again, I think to me, it's sort of like a polishing tool. You still need the human, you know, input and the output, but to get communication that's well-written, crisp, I don't think we write really well anymore these days. I think it can be helpful. So that was the first time I saw a senior leader really embracing the good, because all this technology can be used for good or for evil.
That is communication 101. That's a great answer from the CEO. Like that puts you in the right mindset and say, wow, that was okay for me to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I love AI. I use it all the time to stir ideas, to challenge my thoughts. If I write something, I can put it in and say, make this, you know, remove 100 words and make it more inspirational just to see what it does. I'm not so concerned about it as a writing thing yet because it really is pretty soulless. Like it can do those little summaries and stuff, but if you want it to feel like the reader to feel something, it's really hard. You can't, yeah. it's a soulless mechanism. So, I use it as a tool. I've heard, you know, I've tried this a little bit, but I've heard people say you can pose a problem and say, how would Steve Jobs approach this problem? And it'll give you these different angles. And yeah, you know, it's pretty awesome. So
we'll get to positivity and optimism in the workplace the next time. Have a great weekend. Pride Fest, the Locust Street Beer Run. I'll be there. We'll have sunshine and smiles. See you on Monday.